Welcome to the Amateur Skeptics Podcast number 324. I forgot the intro I had for this man, so this is just a tribute. Here he is, the dumbass himself.
Hey, wait, introduce yourself first.
Oh, I should. You're right. I'm Brian. And of course, now I have the dumbass himself. And I've already messed this up, but it's okay. It's just the two of us. Nobody else is going to know, right?
I'm not going to tell anybody.
Right. Nobody has to know.
We've done 324 of these. I think this is the most that we have ever done of these episodes.
We've
blown past our previous record of 323.
Well, yeah, if I could just get them all edited and out, we'd be in really good shape.
Yeah.
Embarrassingly,
just the two of us today.
Yeah, it's just embarrassingly enough, I just put up 312, but at least it's up, right? We got behind last year, and, you know, with the website and everything, I haven't caught up.
Well, it's always good to have a bunch of them in the can, right?
And we do, right? So that's the good thing. At this point, we have a bunch in the can. Anything fun going on?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. My improv group has a show coming up in March, so I've been practicing for that, having a lot of fun.
So what do you do to practice for improv? Other than get together with your troupe, right?
Yeah, yes, with my troupe. We have, there are warm-up games that we play, and basically after that we just play the games, and often we sit around analyzing what went wrong or what we could have done better and stuff like that. But it's mostly just playing it and getting the experience of doing that.
It's been a long time since I've done improv. I used to teach improv, you know, in my high school, and then in college I ended up at this theater where I would do the lights for them, and so I had fun when the people were on stage. If something was happening, I would do something weird with the lights for them. They would have to react to. So I got to participate in that manner. But yeah, and I was going to say, because I, you know, it's like, how do you as an individual, it's hard to practice improv, because if you are doing that, there's another name for it. They call it stand up, right?
Right. Well, there are certain ways that you can do it. I've got an app on my phone that can have generate random things. And, you know, there are certain things like it generates a random something, and then you challenge yourself to generate a who, what, where for a scene.
Okay.
That involves that thing.
So what other games do you guys do on stage? I was going to say, what are you doing was a game that we used to do. You know, then the person would have to do that game. Or you're usually just taking ideas from the audience and creating a scene based on.
We do a lot of the general Who's Line game, including, some extra ones that they don't do as often. But our games are a lot of scenes. There's a game called Reels, which involves four of us in standing in a square, and we rotate around to do four two-person scenes at a time in front of the audience, and we just have to remember our part when we come up to do that scene, which is pretty fun. But we also do some of the standard Who's Line stuff where start doing scenes from a hat, That's always a fun one.
That is a fun
one. And the dating game, of course.
Oh yeah, I mean, those are go-tos for sure, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that's fun.
And things along those lines.
Yeah, I really enjoy doing all that stuff. I miss doing that, the troupe. That's cool that you're doing that.
But what have you been up to?
I bought a Blackstone griddle.
I'm
making right now my meat for birria tacos is cooking. I will make some birria tacos and working
a lot.
Well,
now I'm jealous.
Have you ever had birria tacos?
No, I haven't. What are birria tacos?
Okay, so it's so what you do is you make this you take all your beef and it's chuck roast or something, you know, it can be a tough meat because you're gonna cook it for a long time. You take peppers, guajillo peppers, Anaheim peppers, different peppers, right? And you throw that all together and you cook those up, right? And then you blitz them and make this kind of consommé out of it that you cook the meat in until it's nice and tender, right? Then you pull your meat out, you shred it, and you take the fat, all the fat from the meat, and you use that to cook the taco. So you take corn tortillas, and then you put then your meat and cheese or whatever you want in your taco, and you fry those on the grill. And then you dip them in that consommé that you cooked it all in. It's great.
Oh, is this you eat them with a knife and fork, or can you hold these?
You can hold them because you cook them. You take corn tortillas, and then you cook them on the grill, and they get crispy.
All right.
But, I mean, no matter what you do, they're greasy. there's no way to get around the fact that either you've cooked it. I mean, there's just there's.
I mean,
just,
as the most tastiest stuff is.
There's yeah. I mean, and it's just so much juice and everything going on. But getting that outside
and
nice
dripping
and
cheese.
It yeah, Oaxaca cheese, right? You can use mozzarella either way. They're very similar. Yeah, they're good.
Well, right. We should get to the podcast before That's I get right. too hungry and have to run off to eat something.
Exactly right. I think it's time for the dumbass masturbation moment brought to you by Dumbass Media Empire. Is it still an empire?
The Amateur Skeptics present Ian's Masturbation Moment, brought to you by the Dumbass Media Empire. The Dumbass Media Empire, bringing you content that touches people while they touch themselves.
I mean, it's as much of an empire as it ever was.
Yeah, so there you go. That's all we need, right?
That's right.
So as usual, myths about masturbation, right? This seems like it's a big theme for us. But in particular, we're talking about what happens to your testosterone when you masturbate, dumbass? Do tell.
That's right. Yeah, I got this article here, which goes into a lot of details about this stuff, the roots of the no-fat movement. And part of it was this one study done that looks at masturbation. It asks a small group of men, this is a small-time study, I think it was 10 men, asked them to avoid masturbating for 3 weeks, and they found that their testosterone levels increased 7 days afterwards, but there was no variation after that. The effect pretty much wore off after that, but after 7 days there was an increase in testosterone, and that has been touted out there as, you know, this is scientific proof that, you know, you want to be more manly, you gotta stop masturbating because that builds up to testosterone, and that's what makes you a manly man, which of course is shaky science to begin with.
We've talked about that before. Texas Ignite, right, which is supposed to increase your testosterone. There's a whole bunch of, I mean, but the fear mongering that's behind this, and this article might have been part of it. Well, you know, there is a slew of products that are supposed to increase your testosterone.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And these are people who are feeling ashamed of how their lack of manliness, they're not as manly as they were in their youth a lot of time with these testosterone replacement things, and they're not feeling like the man they used to be, and they think that this can help.
So, but isn't there a connection between high testosterone and hair loss?
You know, as a man who is losing my hair, I would like to say that it's because I'm extra manly, but I know myself, and I know that I'm not extra manly, but maybe I do have extra testosterone. I don't know.
I'm just wondering because, you know, I've got all my hair. I probably have low testosterone levels, right? Because I'm less of a man than you.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yes, I am, of course, the alpha male of this podcast.
Right, exactly. It comes across.
And you are, of course, the cook.
The cook, right, yeah. Oh, you said cook!
Yes, cuck. You're a cuck, Brian.
You know, I think, you know, the whole idea bothers me. And it may have bothered me from the beginning because I never fit that mold. It's like, well, wait, that's what a man is? Okay, I'm out, right?
I kind of agree with you. I've been always the kind to not really care that much about gender norms. I think I probably told you that when I was in grades like 5 through 7, I think my favorite book series was Sweet Valley Twins by Francine Pascal.
Yeah, you did tell me that. Well, and as somebody who spent, you know, many, many years role playing in their mother's basement, right? I just don't fit that model, you know. And to this day, like last week, you know, there was the big owl, right? Because we can't say, because we can't say shit ball, Super Bowl, whatever. I don't know what we can't say.
And I think we're still allowed to say it. Oh. I think that was Stephen Colbert's bit, right?
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea. It's everywhere now. I don't know.
Stephen Colbert started that, though. So, like, and Superb Owl is a fun thing to say.
And it sounds, yeah, exactly. It sounds like it was probably a great game, and I could care less. The halftime show was okay. Usher was, you know, he was fine. I preferred Rihanna last year, but whatever.
I didn't even pay any attention to it whatsoever.
Well, there's not a lot of point. For me, I just don't get it. I went over to a friend's house. We had hot pot, and then we left. I didn't even know who won the game till, I don't know, I don't know if it was the next day or day later or whatever.
I still don't know who won the game, actually. I don't even care.
Well, I'm not going to tell you. It'll be a big surprise.
Oh, now
someday
I don't
you'll find
know, Brian.
Out. Well, you're
gonna, now I want to tell me. Come tell on, tell me.
It was the Chiefs. They came back. They were down at halftime, man. But they
you
came
took
back.
Absolutely, you caved in absolutely no time.
I know exactly, right? Because I'm not a manly man. A manly man would not have caved. I'm not that man.
And you should feel ashamed of that, according to this study about testosterone.
That's right. What else do we need to know?
Bring it back for full
yeah, bring
circle.
It, yeah, bring it back yeah. full circle, yeah.
Yeah, but women are also feeling pressure about this because there are videos of women commenting on their experience quitting masturbation and how that's helped them. So, like, there are a lot of societal ideas about masturbation that play into this, that mm-hmm. and people are jumping on this idea again, this very old-fashioned idea that masturbation is a huge ill for yourself and for society.
There's a slight caution in here about the idea of reducing, about using it for reducing anxiety, because if you're at a place where you can't do it, that may not be the best coping mechanism, and I agree with that. I don't necessarily think it's wrong to use it for anti-anxiety, right? But obviously you need other coping mechanisms, because you know, if I'm sitting there at work and all of a sudden, you know, things blow up, I can't masturbate at my desk.
Right. No, that's a you've got to like have a bunch of different coping mechanisms, and it goes into how their masturbation can be a problem if you have like compulsive like negative effects on it, like if it goes beyond just like a you know going to masturbate a lot to the point where it's like interfering with your life in fundamental ways. And that's when, you know, maybe you should seek some kind of professional help to put your life in more balance.
Well, and it's probably not the masturbation. There's another reason that you're using that outlet.
Yeah,
right?
there's some sort of mental thing involved, yeah. Some sort of like you're using masturbation inappropriately to cope or something, like to the exclusion of anything else.
And they're saying that, you know, the connection between masturbating, or there's masturbating connection and pornography consumption, right? Which, of course, mm-hmm. we've talked about a lot.
Yeah. And it's really impossible to know, like, how many people are, you know, really addicted to masturbating, I mean, or, like, have, like, some sort of compulsion like this that's really affecting them. I mean, there are, like, groups out there, and these are, like, self-selected individuals who will come up and say that they're addicted to masturbating and they're going to like go through this process and become better and everything, but there's no way of really organizing them based on that and telling how many are out there.
Because it's not a diagnosis, right? I mean, like you say, it's all self-diagnostics that people are coming up with it. And there's nothing worse than Dr. Google, right? And you know, and deciding what your ailment is, and then of course you go to the doctor to get fixed for, you know, what you've decided is the problem. Right. Mm-hmm. And I know that I thought that this toenail was for sure an ear infection, but the doctor assured me that it really was just my toe.
Right.
I mean, that's extreme. But I guess my point is that you can have symptoms that seem similar to one thing without a prior diagnosis. It's likely to be something else. Right. I mean, there's certain things
that
I think.
We have medicine to categorize this kind of stuff, because knowing exactly what's going on in your body and, you know, how that's affecting you is a very difficult thing to narrow down a lot of the time. Like you have a pain somewhere, you're like, what the fuck was that? But then it goes away and like does nothing. Like, what are you supposed to make of that? You know, like lots of stuff goes on inside our bodies and we only have a vague idea of like anything unless we see a doctor, get tests done, and if there's some sort of process going on that we can identify.
Yeah. I mean, when I had my I forget what you call it, my appendix, it didn't burst, it didn't fester, it festered, and I wasn't in a lot of pain, right? And so, you know, of course, I'm in the emergency room and they have no idea what's going on with, you know, because, you know, they do that test where they push on it and they let go of it and then it's supposed to really hurt. Well, not mine. Mine, no. They knew something was going on with me, right? And it took a CT scan to, you know, to pinpoint the area. But without the CT scan, they would have misdiagnosed, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that it could have been a zillion other things. They thought it might be Crohn's disease, you know, a whole list of stuff that they were going through, right? That the potential possibilities and what is it? You know, it was my appendix, and they didn't even know how bad it was until they opened me up, right? They identified the area, but so that one is, I think, more clear cut than some of these psychological things like, you know, like porn addiction or something like that. Because there's no necessarily a physical something you can look at. These, you know, it takes a somebody to talk to somebody to figure out what the actual issue might be. But if you're just at home going, oh, I'm addicted to porn, it's like, really? Yeah.
Some people can say they're addicted to porn in the way that people say they're addicted to Cheetos.
Exactly, but I am addicted to Cheetos. They're fantastic. Yeah. Doritos too, quite a real problem.
I mean, we all are.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I think legitimately, I'm probably addicted to caffeine, right? Because if I don't have it, I get a headache, right? So, I mean,
in terms of psychological terms, the actual meaning of addiction, that's more of a dependency than an addiction.
Exactly, and you're exactly right. But colloquially, we call that an addiction, mm-hmm. right? Because we don't make that distinction mm-hmm. in our daily lives.
No. And the original study that we're going over, there's so much wound up into this about men and their feelings about themselves and testosterone, and whether testosterone would actually help you feel more manlier, like get you into some better place in the first place, is a whole other thing. That a lot of men are just like, I need to feel more manly, give me this stuff. But you have an article looking into, like, more into that study and so, what it says about test.
I mean, this is from Healthline, and so their tact is slightly different. I mean, they're not giving any credibility to the idea that masturbating lowers your testosterone. And in fact, there are articles that contradict that. Right, and the article that you're talking about was 28 people. That's not a study. That's a thought, right?
Right,
that,
pretty
that,
much.
That requires some a little bit more. 28 people, one lab. What if there was something at the lab that was going on? Right, you would never be able to. You'd never be able to parse that out. So there's other studies that show that that masturbating actually increases your testosterone. Okay, no, this one says a study from 2001 in 10 males, okay, 10 males finds that the refractory from masturbation for 3 weeks may cause a mild increase in testosterone, right?
I believe that was the one I was talking about earlier.
Is it? Yeah, okay. So, I mean, that's not better, right? Here's a study on rats, which we know how, you know, that translates yeah. extremely well.
Let's watch these masturbating rats.
Yeah, let's see. Studies. So this one showed that masturbation lowered endogenous receptors. Anyway, it lowered in the brain. So it did something to the brain. And other studies showed that it increased it. And these are so small, these studies, that they're meaningless, right? That they're noise in the data.
It basically only suggests that masturbation has some sort of biological effect on your body, which of course it does.
Right. But it does go into here what the signs are of low testosterone. So these lack of sex drive is this is losing hair on your scalp, maybe be related to low testosterone. So maybe it's flipped. Maybe mine's high and yours is low.
Maybe. Although I haven't experienced a lack of sex drive or anything.
Let's see. Lack of energy or being exhausted, loss of muscle mass, losing bone mass. So osteoporosis can be a sign of low testosterone. And then it says, what are the benefits and risks of masturbating? And it says, do they have any risks? They only have benefits here. It says, what are the benefits and risks of masturbating? And I don't see the risks. So relieve stress, relieve sexual tension, improve mood, helps relax and reduce anxiety, helps you get more satisfying sleep, helps you learn more about your sexual desire, improve sexual life.
I mean, the only real risk I can think of masturbating is possibly if you do it too much and you're not having enough lube, it could be like skin
sure.
issues there. But
I'm looking. I don't see wrists. It says wrists, but I don't see any wrists on here. But it does say that masturbating does not cause hair loss. So there you go. So it's not masturbating that's causing you to lose your hair.
Oh, good. Because like this whole time, I was like, am I going to need to stop masturbating? Damn it.
Yeah. And so the takeaways here are pretty much the same, that, you know, masturbation does not impact your testosterone levels.
I'm quite relieved.
Yeah. I mean, there's just nothing conclusive that suggests that it does. And some studies show a lot, you know, I mean, there's never been a study big enough to really demonstrate that there's a connection here. And the other question that none of these articles say, and we'd have to go to the data, what do they mean by lower? Right?
Right.
I mean, I guess I don't know what they measure it in anyway, but let's say a normal range is between 80 and 100, right? Whatever that might mean. And lower means lower end of 80? Or does it mean high 70s or low 70s, right? I mean, I don't know what low means in relationship to these studies. And I don't understand why people are so worried about it either.
Right,
I mean,
like is low testosterone necessarily a bad thing, and doesn't even necessarily mean that you're less manly.
Right, and you know, and I guess you know, humans' testosterone levels have been. Oh no, that's sperm levels. I don't know where our testosterone levels are. They might be lower than generations before, but I don't know that that's necessarily a problem. Right.
No.
And maybe it's a good thing.
I don't see any lack of sex drive out there in the young or anything like that.
Yeah. Anything else? I don't know. I didn't really find much more in this article than was actually a little bit more thorough about the particular thing you were looking.
Well, shall we move on to the next one then?
Want to talk about the work week? The 4-day work week? Or a shorter work week?
Oh, did you not want to go about
the... Oh, what do you want? Oh, no, you've got another one on here. Yeah, no, keep going. What's the next one we got? Let's do it. I didn't read this one, so you're on your own, buddy.
Well, let me tell you about Drake Handy, the man who is trying to break the masturbation world record.
I love the name.
So he claims he's actually beaten this record before, it wasn't private.
Get it.
This is the longest time spent masturbating. So he's going to make the attempt. And let me see. I think the record at the moment is 9 hours, 9.5 hours. Let me see if I can verify that on the page here.
We talked about it before. I distinctly remember us talking about whoever, or was it two people having sex for the longest time?
That might have been it.
I'm trying to remember. He claims to have beat the somebody's 9 hours and 33 minutes, recorded.
9 hours and Masanobu Sato's 9 hours and 33 minutes. Recognized by the Center for Sex and Culture back in 2009.
Okay.
So he claims he's already...
I was going to say...
Go ahead.
I thought that it was dangerous to have an erection for more than 4 hours. Is that only if you're using... is that only if you're using Viagra or Cialis? That's a problem?
I think as a side effect from Viagra or Cialis, it might mean something different if your erection lasts that long. I think it's different... If you keep your erection up for that long, although I imagine it's probably still hard on your body and you probably don't want to do that all that often.
I'm trying to imagine having an erection for 9 hours, right? If you're masturbating for that long, presumably you have an erection for that entire time, right? Is there something I don't know?
I don't know the exact qualifications for it, but I'm assuming that's how they measure it, that they've got somebody there checking that you're still playing with it and they still got an erection on.
I'm sorry. If you're doing it for 9 hours, it's work. It's not just playing with it anymore.
Definitely, he should be paid for that. The record is part of the San Francisco's annual Masturbate-a-thon fundraiser. What's the name of this charity? It's up here somewhere, right? I should take notes on these before.
No. That's not in the spirit of this podcast. Don't start that shit.
You're right. Be prepared. But anyway, there's this organization promotes.
So the masturbation. Yeah. Well, if I click on the fundraiser, it takes me to something charity. So charities, Latin Bible.
Oh, here it's the Center for Sex and Culture.
This is on a LatinBible.com. And they're talking about masturbation. What is Latin Bible?
I think this is Lad Bible.
Lad Bible. Okay, what is Lad Bible?
Not entirely sure.
Okay. So he's raising money for somebody. Oh, it says for various charities.
I think that's the masturbate-a-thon is...
Oh, that's for various charities.
Okay. I think maybe the Center for Sex and Culture kind of organize it.
Okay.
I like the line here about the record. He said, speaking to Mel Magazine, he said, I knew I could beat it.
Yeah, exactly. That's a double entendre, right?
Yep.
So when's he planning to do this?
He's world record claiming that he's done it himself.
Yeah, he always says he can do it.
He claims he can masturbate for a total of 10 hours and 10 minutes, and he's offering some tried and tested tips for lasting longer. Do you want to hear them?
Yeah, I sure do.
Well, he explains that you first need to get into the mood by putting on some music and setting the lighting. He says, this is a time to focus on pleasuring me. He also claimed that sex toys helped extend his marathon sessions. I do like that. I do like that he's taking the time to set the mood to kind of take himself on a date, you know, like not just, hey, let me reach into my own pants, but hey, me, I think you're worth, you know, taking a little time with.
Yeah, that's good. I like it.
He says it's work to go beyond 6 hours, but he strives to keep it pleasurable and that he won't continue if he's not receiving pleasure. Or if it becomes painful.
Okay. This seems like a silicone lube situation for sure, right?
Definitely. He says he doesn't advocate for people masturbating for any insane length of time, but he does want people to focus on pleasuring themselves more. He says, don't just make yourself come in 5 minutes because you're horny or watching porn. Focus on pleasuring yourself and finding out what turns you on and what feels good.
All right. Don't disagree with that either.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but at some point, is it not pleasurable anymore? That's just a long time.
Mm. Yeah, it is a long time. He said apparently he's got a lot of focus. He said the first time he did 10 hours, he kind of lost track of time because he looked over and suddenly it was 10 hours. So like, I guess it's something that he can get caught away in doing that, which, man, who has that kind of time, right?
Wait, he also admits that keeping up the momentum while masturbating, he often allows his erection to become partial. What's this, tumescence? Yeah, which he says is essentially a fancy scientific term for the penis is partly but not fully erect. So he isn't staying fully erect the whole time.
No, I guess partially erect counts to the record.
It must. Yeah, so he admits that resting his bits in this manner can sometimes be risky, and said that often leads to him to lose his momentum.
Right. If you go half mast, it's easy to just lose it completely.
Okay.
But I guess he admits it is important to take rest breaks. I guess it can't be like full mast the whole time.
It seems like that's probably would be dangerous.
Yeah. But anyway, I like the ending here because he talks about his reasons to compete in the masturbate-a-thon, and he says he wants to inspire people to be open and honest about sexual freedom. He said that when he was younger, he was taught that pleasuring himself sexually was sinful and something to be ashamed of. And he says, I want to share my experiences with others in the hope that their journey to sexual freedom can be shorter, better informed, and more open and honest with themselves and others.
Okay.
And yeah. I can get behind that.
Yeah, the only part I don't like is masturbating for 10 hours.
The Amateur Skeptics podcast does not encourage anybody to masturbate for 10 hours.
Man, go read a book.
I think I would get a lot more out of reading a book than masturbating for 10 hours.
But good on him, man. I mean, it looks. I mean, he's doing it. I mean, doing it for the right.
He has his own goals. He has his own goals, and I appreciate what he's saying about sexuality and being open and explorative.
Yeah, that's cool. All right, are we ready to talk about the 4-day work week?
Let's talk about the 4-day work week.
So this says a psychologist explores the short work week paradox. So this is a big conversation actually happening in the U.S. and other places, the idea that our work week is too long. And if you look around the world, you know, like France, I think, has a cap on a work week of 35 hours. And the UK, I think it's similar. I know that my colleagues in the UK, where I'm expected to put in somewhere around 8 hours a day, that they're expected to put in around 7 hours a day. So their work day is already slightly shorter than mine technically. I find that I'm putting in somewhere around 50 hours of work, and you know, because my job is not so cut and dry, right? My hours are flexible, and like this week I ran into an issue and I spent, you know, a whole night focusing on one issue. But the other thing I do notice is that, you know, my most productive hours are going to be when I get to work, right? And throughout the day I probably become less productive. So this idea that, you know, that you know, certainly the longer I work in a day, the less productive I'm going. And I think that might be part of it. If I had a shorter work day, you know, I would get that's probably the same amount of things done, and then go about and do the rest of my day. I don't know for sure though how that would work. But so they suggest different ways to accomplish the shorter work week. So 4 days is one, fewer hours in a day is another. They suggest some half days. So like you'll have some afternoons off or something like that. There's some claims, and I'm going to call them claims because I don't know how well this has been studied, but that it improves performance. Based on some trials, I think that 34% of employees were more productive.
How you qualify productiveness, measure that.
Yeah, and I guess they say they were 40% happier. I'm not sure how they come up with those numbers.
Yeah, that's a weird metric.
So
must be self-reported, I imagine.
It says that 34% of employees felt more productive. And that's from, there's a Microsoft Japan. There was a study that they did where they reduced meetings to 30 minutes. This is a good idea, right? When a meeting goes on beyond half an hour, this I agree with no matter what. Meetings should be limited.
There should be somebody in a sound booth in every meeting room who will just play you off the moment it hits 30 minutes.
Exactly, right? And the other thing that they said is that they limited the meeting participants. That's good, too, because not everybody needs to be at your stupid meeting, right? Get the people that need to be there. We have a person that used to do a hell of a lot of work for us, but he retired and he came back as a contractor. Mm-hmm. And when he came back as a contractor, like he knows the things that he liked to do for us, and that's all he does, right? And he doesn't go to meetings, you know. He's not a manager anymore. All these things that he prefers, right? He gets to go in and he just troubleshoots nodes most of the time. That's what he does, and he keeps our node count up, which we need somebody to do. And it's great to have somebody doing that. That's what he likes to do. It's perfect. And since, you know, he's been doing this for, you know, for 50 some odd years, something like that. I don't know. He's got at least 40 years of experience. He's a great person to go and ask questions to, and so he's a great person to mentor you and give you information. But you can tell the difference between when he was working there versus now. He's a much happier person now. He comes in, he does the things that he wants to. He works the hours that he wants to, because as a contractor, he's hourly anyway. So he gets, you know, so he does. So he, it really worked out for him pretty well. But of course, you know, he did it for 40 years, and now he gets to come back and do just the piece of the job he loves. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, sweet deal.
Yeah, but so, I mean, and they say other health improvements, higher satisfactory of work, better work-life balance. I don't know. I
do wonder how easy it is to measure that kind of thing, because there is a bit of a factor where, like, the amount of work you put into a project will basically shrink or expand somewhat based on the deadline. So, like, if your project is coming up sooner, then you're focusing on, okay, just what needs to be done, whereas if you have more time, you'll put extra work into it and, you know, add extra bells and whistles and stuff and pad things out to make a fuller product. But, you know, that kind of thing, like, either way, whether you're measuring your productivity, you still produced one product in that time.
So, and the other thing is that they suggested that when these kinds of things were done for long term, so in the short term that they're helpful, but in the long term, they said that that things it doesn't last. In other words, is what they were saying. That this Gallup poll from 2020 was suggesting that it didn't last as long, and they associated more burnout with the 4-day work week than the 5-day work week. And so I think, I mean, what happens maybe, like what you're saying, is that you end up trying to put, like people will try to put more into those 4 days or something. So they might do the same amount of work that they were doing in 5, but they condense it, and that it causes more burnout, perhaps.
Maybe. That's also another possibility of how it's going to go around, too. So, like, it's hard to, like, tease out all of these little factors, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and the other one is monetary issues. So for a lot of companies, if you're going to do less work, you know, if we're getting less hours out of you, you're also going to get less pay. And this caused a problem for several people. Due to reduced work hours left, 45% of individuals were worse off. So, and worried about their retirement funds and stuff like that. So like for me, If I you know, reducing my work hours, I don't want to reduce my salary, right? That would be a problem for, especially here in this, you know, right now it seems like everything has gotten expensive on, and that my salary has not kept up, right? So, that would be a problem for me.
Inflation is a killer right now.
Yeah, and they say reduce. It's leveled out, right? It's so I'm not so worried about it, but reduce employee bonding. So when you have a little bit of time, you know, lunch breaks and stuff like that, other companies have reduced lunch breaks from an hour to a half hour to make up for the extra time that they're not at work. So that could be a problem. And I wonder if, you know, I what kind of job are we talking about when we're talking about reducing those hours too? You know, like for me, I'm an exempt employee. I'm a salaried employee. So I don't count my hours in the same way as somebody who's getting paid hourly would. You're probably similar, right? Because you're pretty much an independent employee or an independent worker, right?
Right. Yeah. I choose when to look for projects or work, or if I do repeat work for a client.
Yeah. So reducing your work week almost doesn't make sense for what you do either, right? Because it's based on, I mean.
Yeah, I work based on how much I need to work.
Right. Yeah. So, and for me, it's a little bit different. I mean, I'm required to put in 40 hours. Anything I do above and beyond that is up to me. But you know, there are benefits for me for doing such thing. I don't know. I don't know how this works, and I don't know how this works in the U.S. We have a certain culture. I can see where we say reduce from 8 hours to 7 hours a day would not have much impact. It probably wouldn't impact me at all. I don't know what would happen, but maybe for other employees, they could reduce reduce the time that they work, particularly if you work at a job like McDonald's or some job like that. Those are terrible jobs. And maybe in those cases, increasing their salary slightly and reducing the hours, but that's going to cost the business money, right, to do that because they've got to fill those other hours enough. I don't know. There's trade-offs to this whole thing. I don't know. It's worked for France. It seems to work for the UK. They have a little bit better worker protection. For me, you know, reducing my workday an hour probably would not. You probably wouldn't see much of my productivity. It'd probably be fine. But I don't know how that works for everybody. It's an interesting idea. I mean, obviously, the idea of working less and having more time to do other things is always appealing. I just don't know how it works in practice.
Yeah, I mean, I think a flexible work week is a better idea than setting a specific number of days that you want to aim for, because especially depending on the job and even how much you want to, you know, plug away at it, there can be a lot of factors influencing, you know, what kind of a work week you have.
I think that there should be a holiday in every month in the U.S., So at some point you're always getting a 3-day weekend. That's what I'd be good with that, and I actually probably have enough days off that I could create that for myself. So there you go. See, so I can already have it.
Sounds good.
What do you got?
Well, would you like to talk about AI and people who Neil Luddite's warning about problems?
Always.
Well, we've talked about.
I mean, both of these that you've got here are probably pretty good. Problems with AI hiring tools.
Yeah. We've talked a little bit about that in the past. This is like more specific data about stuff that's going on. But I do want to give like the Neil Luddites a little bit of credit, because there are dangers regarding AI out there. I just sometimes, a lot of the time, I wish that people would, you know, look at the real dangers instead of thinking, because I went to a small little get-together, a little table discussion on AI that we were talking more about virtual reality, but it was like stuff related to AI. And we talked about that a little bit. And the thing that really gets me, like, looking at this kind of stuff is how, like, the conversation about AI often, like, goes to things like how they basically they're afraid of the Terminator, of Skynet coming into being and the robots taking over and we'll all become their slaves, which is a very science fiction idea that is, you know, something that I guess it's worthwhile talking about, but especially with the way current AI operates, it's not one of the real dangers of, like, there are a lot of things that we should be looking at that people are just, like, going off in directions that are, I think, fruitless.
I would tend to agree. I'm also not worried about my job because half my job is fixing the AI, right? So I still have a job even when it takes everybody else's because somebody has behind the scenes. I mean, until they build an AI to fix the AI, and, you know, that's a ways away.
Yeah, basically, AI still doesn't have very much, like, I think they still only have about the number of neurons of a worm. We've done a lot with, like, getting AI to do specific things that a brain can do and do it really well, but it's still not really an intelligence, a brain.
Nope. In fact, you know, these ChatGPT and these guys, they're not intelligent. They're just big pattern matching things, right? They do some interesting things, and they can do some interesting things. But I mean, at this point, they can't replace your doctor, right? There's just no way.
No.
They half the time they lie to you, right? Because they don't actually know what they're saying. So I guess they're not actually, you know, it's hard to call it lying because they're not intelligent enough to know that it's not true. And you know, they're only as good as the data built into them. They have no way to analyze the data, right? A self-driving car still can't drive on a road that, you know, where the lines are ambiguous, right? I mean, so the idea that they're going to take over for taxi drivers, I think, is a fiction. We are a long way off from the Terminator.
I mean, yeah, it does seem like we're in a period of explosive growth right now, and I think especially to people who haven't been keeping track of the way AI has been going. Like, we were on this fairly early on, but even before that, I was looking at some of the stuff going on with AI and being like, we should do an episode about this because this is getting, like, really interesting. But, I think it's going to reach a plateau. I mean, like, it seems like we're on, like, a big upward tick right now. And the guy in this article, Eliezer Yudkowsky, is saying that, within like 5-10 years, probably the robots, there's going to be a robot revolution. They're going to take over and, you know, we're essentially going to be extinct, which there is no reason to believe that is just a thing that science fiction writers have dreamed up. There's no reason to believe that is the way that AI will go. And it kind of ignores the real dangers of AI right now that are going on.
Yeah. But I mean, before AI, do you remember what the big thing was?
The big thing before AI?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the few years before AI, what was the thing that was going that was just blowing up?
I mean, like, AI has been like there've been like steady improvements and like stuff that they've been working on for decades, I think. But what are you talking about?
I'm talking about it was VR. VR for the last couple of years.
It's still a big trend.
Yeah, but it's died off in favor of people talking about artificial intelligence, right? And because it didn't come to fruition the way that people thought it was going to. Look at what Facebook did, right? They were going to have the whole metaverse, right?
And he wasn't onto nothing though. I mean, like, he was trying to, like, get the technology. He just wasn't able to make it work. But he wasn't onto nothing, I think, because there is demand out there for that kind of ability to get yourself in immersive situations in VR, especially for, like, day-to-day work activities.
Sure, but the hype is always bigger than the product, right? Mm-hmm. I mean the hype with VR and AVR and all these couldn't keep up with the hype. And so it kind of it went away after a silent. Is there still stuff going on? Absolutely.
I think you have to like pick your timing because like there are certain times where you got like just the right factors in place where you can throw money at something and have the technology developed and come up with something spectacular. And I think that's what they were hoping was going to happen there, but they just threw a bunch of money at it and they just couldn't make it work.
And I think that we're going to see that happen here. That this is going to, after a while, I think that people, at some point, I think they'll be the next new big thing, and this will be happening in the backgrounds. We still have you know these companies that are scraping information, and now there's copyright issues, right? With Stable Diffusion and all of these, and they're like, and they want to scrape every piece of of artwork out there to build their thing. They're like, well, if we had to pay for all this, we wouldn't have a product. Well, then maybe you shouldn't have a product, right? If you're going to violate people's IP.
I mean, there is an argument to that, but at the same time, when they're taking the because the big thing people think that they're actually copying this data and putting it in their databases and using that copyrighted work in order to make new stuff. When what they're really doing is the AI is just studying the patterns of these things. It's impossible for it to contain all the data of this stuff that is scraping. So basically you're saying, well, the AI can't even look at this artwork and study it in order to create some sort of neural network representation of the ideas that it invokes.
Well, I mean, if you look at ChatGPT, and Adam Conover has been complaining about this Adam Ruins Everything is a show that was, they had a run on, a couple seasons on TV, and everything that was in there has been put into ChatGPT, and you can tell it, write me an episode of Adam Ruins Everything about X, right? And it'll do it. Now, will it all be true? That's really speculation. But the point is, it's capable of doing it in that style because of something that it stole.
Well, you say stole, but it's stuff that's out there that you can just look at and anybody can study it and create something in that same style.
I mean, potentially, but...
Is it stealing if I, read an article and then say, all right, I could write something like this, and I write something similar?
I mean, it depends, right? Depends on how... If you could be sued for it, right? If it's that close to something else that's been done.
That's what they call in AI terms an overmatch, and they try to train them to avoid those.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, a lot of people, if people don't want their data in these AI models, I don't think it should be there. I think it's different than you watching something and then creating something in that vein. I don't know. I think that there's a lot of legal ground still yet to cover with this stuff too, and that could stifle it for a while.
I think we've got to grapple with the fact that these are neural networks. People when they describe what's going on, with these word things, they say, "Oh, what it is just they've chopped up the words of a bunch of articles on the internet, and then they're just pasting it together in a different way, and it's all their stolen stuff." When that's not really what's going on at all. The thing is learning the patterns of the articles and stuff and the words and the way they come out.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I understand that what they're doing is slightly different, but it's still incapable of telling truth from fiction, right?
True.
It's not intelligent.
It's basically trying to imitate what a human would say, and it doesn't have any thought process. It doesn't have the ability to discern anything beyond this is a pattern that I think matches.
Right. So in a lot of ways, is it not just regurgitating what's been fed into it?
Well, but aren't we all just regurgitating what's been fed into us then?
Well, I mean, at some point that question will lead us down to free will, won't it?
And I've been having talks with friends about free will. A lot of people I know don't think it exists.
I'm more and more coming down on that side of the fence as well.
Well, and if that's what you believe, then maybe the difference between AI and what humans produce really isn't that big of a deal after all.
It might not be. From that perspective, right? I don't know. Ultimately, the question is, can the tool be useful?
I mean, obviously it can be useful. You know, I mean, you have to, of course, you know, within parameters, you have to, like, watch it and make sure that it's getting appropriate stuff and everything, but it can be, of course.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but I don't think it's as useful as the hype would claim it is.
No, no, the hype, there are, the article here goes into more reasonable Luddites who don't necessarily think that it'll be world-ending, but recognize that are problems, and sometimes they're overblown, sometimes, you know, there's discussion, but one of the things I did want to point out in the same vein, the other article I've got here, is regarding AI hiring tools.
Okay, yeah.
Which basically is all about companies just, you know, wanting to fire their HR department. But a lot of concerns have been raised because, like, they've been sold as that, oh, AI hiring programs can get rid of bias, but people are showing there seems to be bias in what they're doing in a lot of these cases. Bias that, you know, like, towards things on the resume that shouldn't even be a part of it, like whether you played baseball or softball.
That, now that's interesting. I wouldn't even, you know, that kind of stuff is in here.
Right. Basically, men are more likely to say that they played baseball, whereas women will be more likely to say that they played softball. And the AI noticed, like, a positive association with baseball and people who do well in their jobs, of course, and that's just a proxy for being a man. Because men get promoted more and tend to get more commendations and things like that. So, like, there have been these biases that people have been noticing in these AIs that people are using to try and hire people.
That is interesting. Yeah, I know that like, a lot of these companies now, there's one that I hear advertisements for all the time. I mean, and these are just AI-driven kind of products, you know, for collecting the resumes and then suggesting to the hiring people which ones are going to be the best, right? I'm trying to remember what the name of the one that I always hear is, you know. But, yeah, that's exactly what's happening. It's not a human that's making these, you know, and, like, say, it's matching for certain patterns. And that takes a lot of the, I don't know.
But it's just one thing, like, they try to make it sound like they're trying to make it more fair. And, like, you can, like, instruct an AI to disregard things like gender. But, like I just said, they'll find proxies that relate to performance that also relate to gender, which is another way of unknowingly discriminating against people. And what gets to me about the whole thing is that, like, they point out, oh, AI can do this extremely fast and go through a bunch of resumes. But what gets to me is that you could do that with standard algorithmic programming without bothering to include AI, any of this stuff. And if you do so, if you do it with standard programming, you can, you know, if somebody accuses you of having bias, you can show them the code and be like, okay, if there's bias in this code, let's look at this and we can correct that.
Yeah. The other thing I think, and this is one of the things that I don't like, is that we're attaching AI to everything, whether it belongs there or not, right? It's an AI. It's an AI, and it's not. It's just a regex, you know? And I think that happens a lot.
Yeah. There's one case here where one user was screened out, submitted their same application again, but tweaked their birth date to make themselves younger, and with this change, they got an interview.
Yeah, that's... It's just not right. That's age discrimination built right into it, huh?
Right. And, of course, like, AIs are kind of a black box, so it's hard to, like, track this down and know, like, exactly what biases are in there. It's just using it inappropriately, saying it'll be better, but it's so much worse. And it's doing the same thing. It's not doing a better job of it as what you could accomplish with regular programming.
Yeah. It's they're using it where it's unnecessary.
That's what gets to me as a programmer myself, that, you know, you're just doing extra unnecessary stuff. I mean, like, I can, like, use AI in limited cases where it has been shown to be useful. There's no sense trying to make everything AI.
Yeah, I think also the term AI is muddied right now. I don't think the definition is clear enough to distinguish what is an AI and what is just standard programming. Because,
you know, that go ahead.
I was going to say that makes it so that we, I mean, I think because they're calling everything AI at this
point. Yeah, I think that's been a long running problem, though, because artificial intelligence is a thing that has been like historically used to describe a lot. I mean, even like in video games, just like the procedural way that a character moves has been called artificial intelligence, even though it's just a pattern.
Right. It's certainly artificial, but I come back to that. None of this is actually intelligent.
No, no. And when I talk about artificial intelligence in this situation, I'm talking about things that are actually using like neural networks.
Right. Which is a little, which is very different. If not just a little different, it's a totally different model for doing things.
Yeah, it's a very different model. It's a thing where basically it's mimicking the way a brain works, but we've only got a little bit of that we've got a little bit of the way the brain works. I like to compare it to, we've got basically the mechanism in your brain that within a split second recognizes something, right?
Yeah,
because that's what these started out as recognition engines, recognizing things in photos and labeling them. And that's basically what we still got going on. We've just managed to like put extra procedures in there in order to trick it into doing more with that information. And I think we're going to reach a plateau with what we can do with that very soon.
Yeah, I like her conclusion that basically that in the end that the author fears that it's actually going to make the workplace more unequal than before.
Mm.
And I think that the other thing is that you can hide certain sins in the code, right? So if you don't want to hire black people, right? Well, the AI made the choice, not me, right?
Mm.
And that's the other thing I fear.
Yeah, especially if you're like conniving, like you could like train the AI yourself to exclude certain people. It would only come up in like a, you wouldn't be able to look at the AI code and come up with that. You'd only be able to tell that through using it and finding the patterns.
Yeah, exactly. And that's another thing that concerns me about using it. It's one mm-hmm. thing for using it for helping you flush out some code to, you know, to turn, you know, your light switches on and off. But it's mm-hmm. another when we're talking about something like hiring people where bias is already a big.
Yeah. Yeah, but and like this is just going to exacerbate that and like add new things into it. Like I said, it is so easy to do exactly this stuff with just standard procedural programming. People, you can sort through resumes really easily and just have it look for keywords and stuff. I mean, like you're not getting better results. There is no magic to selecting an employee for your company. You're not going to get better results using, you know, an AI tool.
I don't know. At this point, I just don't think that I can trust an AI till it can masturbate me for 10 hours.
I think that'll be the next technology they work on, Brian. I hear Microsoft already has a project in the works on that.
I'll bet they do. Yeah. No, I think you're right. Use the right tool for the job. And mm-hmm. the tools are probably not coming for your job. They will change the way that you do your job, but I don't think they're coming to take jobs away entirely. And that includes driving my car, cooking my meals. There's just a lot of things, cutting my hair. There's just stuff here that it's never going to touch, and other things that it's going to change. But I don't see it. Maybe it will eliminate some jobs eventually, but man, it is not in the short term.
No, and A lot of the time, you do have to do extra processing with things with AI. It's not like it just automatically gives you something magical that you can use and paste and go out there. Like images, you have to do some photoshopping in them a lot of the time to correct stuff. And like output that it gives you in ChatGPT, you're going to have to check whether certain things are truthful or maybe like do editing it on it and stuff and get it out your way. So like.
Well, with news agencies already got in trouble for using AI to write news articles without fact-checking, right? I mean, it was a huge problem because they were so bad, and every one of them was wrong, right? I forget who that was. Was it CNN maybe that did that?
Yeah, there is no way with our current technology to train AI to know the difference between truth and fiction. It's just information out there, and yeah, it's a miracle that we've got these things talking at such a, you know, such an advanced level already. There are limits to the technology.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got a ways to go.
Yeah, and I think we've got to look at AI in context of what we already have in place. Like, if you're talking about writers or artists or whatever, we can't act as though the current system in place is not extremely, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Extremely, you know, working them to death and giving them peanuts. What's the word? Exploitative.
Yeah.
Exploitative. That's the word I was looking for. We can't pretend that the systems we have in place aren't exploitative to these authors and their to these creatives and their talents, and that like people are taking advantage of what they put out there and giving them nothing. And then we've got AI art coming out here, and they're, you know, jealous that that's getting a piece of the pie now. And we're like, how can I distinguish myself when they're, you know, it's already a thing where their art is already majorly devalued in society in the first place. So you gotta feel for them in that sense. But my hope of it is that, because like a lot of the public structures that are draining these creative people dry, that these people are, when AI reaches the point that you can, with a small group of people, you know, create movies, television shows, books, and anything like that on a small budget, that you can put it out there and it'll look professional, it'll look as good as the stuff that major studios are out there. I'm hoping that that'll cause these major studios sucking artists dry to become obsolete.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think that, you know, we recently had the writer's strike and then a SAG strike, right? And one of the things that the writer's strike was trying to prevent them using ChatGPT to write script, right? And to rewrite scripts. And I really think that I think that there's still a discussion to be had of what we're training these AIs on, the training materials, and whether or not it, you know, they should be training them on certain material. I really think that discussion needs to be had, to prevent any backlash later. Right now, there's just sucking up everything, and I don't know that I think that is a great idea. And if people
I think it's going to like get to the point where your average person can get an AI and program it with whatever data they want, and there's nothing to prevent like them setting up a standard robot to search the web for different things stands. So I don't see how you prevent it from happening.
No, I mean, maybe you can't. I don't know. I think that there needs to be some legal. Some of the stuff needs to go through the court though, to find out, you know, where we're going to stand on some of this stuff. Because I think there's some open legal questions here that need to be taken care of. And I think some of this stuff is in the court right now. So we'll see where it flushes out. I think that that's necessary as part of the process.
Yeah, I suppose so.
You can't do anything without lawyers.
I don't hold out much hopes because, like, yeah, I think a lot of it is just that the world, like, we've been living in a bit of a dystopia without, you know, recognizing it for a long time. And like there, when legislation comes out, it's always going to be things that doesn't help people who are already disadvantaged and stuff. It just gets more dystopian a lot of the time. Maybe I'm just buying into a lot of the pessimism of the current age, but it just feels like the companies are always trying to do something that will allow them to take advantage of people as much as possible. And
I think that includes the AI companies too, though.
Yeah, the AI, I mean, you can make accusations of that sort. I guess we don't need to, like, go over the whole thing about whether it actually is theft or not, but...
No. But at some point, I think that we need to revisit what happened with Microsoft and OpenAI and that whole situation, right? And what was going on there and what the resolution was. Because that wasn't about AI. That was purely political, right? And Microsoft... you know, the way that they behaved in that whole situation to get the CEO put back in and stuff like that. I think there was a lot of strong arming going on and stuff like that. And, you know, a lot of the employees felt like the company was going in the wrong direction. I think that there's a lot going on with OpenAI that needs to be brought into the light.
Yeah, you're probably right there. I mean, I haven't even been paying attention to what's going on there outside of the peripheries. I know that there was like some shenanigans going on there, and he has like questionable morals or something.
I would say so. I think that's not an unreasonable conclusion. But like I say, I think at some point we should look into that one a little closer to take a closer look at what happened there. Because I think while it's not necessarily all technical, it really has it has an effect on the end product. Yeah. I think we're gonna hold off on woolly mammoths. I think we're done for the evening.
All right, yeah, that works out for me.
Okay, good. Well, I'd say goodnight, everybody, but it's just the two of us, so good night.
Good night.
That's
another woolly mammoth in the can for next time.
For next time, yep.
If you've made it this far, that's an hour of your time. You're never getting back. But the Amateur Skeptics appreciate you giving that hour to us. If you'd like to tell us how you felt about spending that hour with us, let us know at WTF@amateurskeptics.com. The Amateur Skeptics podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Share Alike No Derivatives 3.5 license. Intro music by Peter Canold. Find more of Peter's music at soundcloud.com/PKANOL. Exit music by OFM. Find more of their music at myspace.com/OFMHQ. Artwork for the Amateur Skeptics by Sean Smith Ford. Copyright Shadow Knight Digital Portraiture.